roundtable discussion conducted by Kieran Murray on the subject of European citizenship, a relevant theme as 2013 has been named European Year of the Citizens by the EU.
In this program, a panel of European citizens would try to answer two questions such as, is there such a thing as European citizenship? Are we more defined by what we are not, Americans, Asians, African, rather than for what we are?
This program has been made with the help of the Department of the Taoiseach as part of the Communicating Europe initiative.
Tá fáilte romhaibh go léir. Hello and welcome to this special panel discussion on European citizenship. This program is part of the Communicating Europe initiative and the Irish presidency of the EU. And now to my guests. I'm Kieran Murray. I'm from Dublin. And we have Dorothy Meyer-Holtkamp from Germany.
Hello.
Cristina Santa Maria from Spain.
Hola.
Maurizio Pitto from Italy.
Hi.
And Rasti Blaštek from Slovakia.
Hi.
Okay. But I suppose when it comes to Europe, one of the questions that is there is, do we actually feel European or is it just a place on the map? Maurizio, are you European?
Yes, I feel European, definitely. Like a lot of Italians, Italy is a very European country. Also, my generation was born with European programs like Erasmus, so traveling, I study abroad, etc. Personally, when people ask me where you're from, I said I'm from Sardinia, I'm European, and I'm Italian because my identity is Sardinia because my region. But I feel other European countries, a citizen, part of my identity and big country. So I don't feel just European or just Italian or just Sardinian, but I feel a mix of different culture, different region.
And Cristina, do you think people in Spain generally, or how about yourself, do you feel European?
I do. I can't speak for the other 40 million Spaniards in Spain and around the world, but I certainly, I do. I think it's a state of mind. I think it's a way of looking at the world, and it is a way in which we accept that certain things should be in place, certain institutions, certain welfare systems, certain way of thinking, certain level of choice or the appearance of choice in life that in other countries may not be in place. So in that sense, I do. I do feel European. I think what Mauricio was saying, this easiness of travel defines a lot a privilege to be part of a union.
So you think there's certain things that you can list in a society that should be there that makes you European?
Yes, I think so. I was actually, in preparing for the programme today, I was kind of doing a bit of thinking about it. And you know, there are ways, there are structures within a society, and I think within European society that we can expect to be, you know. There's this freedom of travel, first of all. The ability to travel for education as an institution that you can share in and amongst all the European countries. This idea that there has to be a welfare system to look after the less privileged in our societies, and that's very much shared within Europe. I know some countries may have more developed welfare systems, for instance, than others, but certainly there is this kind of idea.
Okay, we'll hold on to the question of social welfare legislation just for the moment. Rasti, Slovakia is a newer country to the EU, but do you feel European?
Oh, definitely, yes. I would be a bit concerned if I'm asked by somebody on the street, like who you are or where you come from. I would undoubtedly respond, I'm Slovak. Or from Slovakia, but Slovakia is that's my nationality, and Slovakia is a member of EU, but on the other hand, if even not EU states or not EU member states are, which are placed in the Europe as a continent, they are all part of Europe. So obviously it would be same like if you or if we ask a Nigerian whether he feels being African. Yes, I do feel myself being European.
Okay. Dorothy, is it different being German than being Slovakia insofar as how do you feel you're European?
I suppose it very much depends, like, what country you derive from, how long you have been a member, where you're even situated geographically. Are you in the heartland of Europe or more the periphery? Have you been there from the beginning as one of the member states, like Germany was, or have you joined recently? But coming back to the question, do I feel European? I feel both. I feel German and European, and sometimes one identity comes out stronger than the other. So I suppose it also depends where I am situated. So if I'm further abroad, like in Asia, I feel more European, maybe, because that's another collective, or maybe it's a bigger cluster, I suppose, where I come from them. But within Ireland, I feel Irish as well sometimes, being here for such a long time and understanding the Irish culture and the English language.
How long have you lived here?
14 years nearly.
Yeah. Christina?
21 years.
You beat me.
I know.
Rusty?
Just a bit over 8 years.
Maritza?
7. The baby.
Okay.
So I get the honour, do I?
Maritza, you mentioned that you often feel Sardinian first because it's your place of birth. Does European become one of your identities, or is it somewhere along the line of your identities? Are you first Sardinian, then Italian, then European? Is it and is it always the same? Because Dorothy said it can be different in different places.
Yeah, I think it is not a contrast. I feel Sardinian, I feel European, I feel Italian. It's not an identity. They are identities, plurals. So that means I feel different location, different mood. If I'm not in Europe, I feel very European. When I'm in Ireland, I feel Italian because it's not easy for Irish people see the difference between Sicilian or Sardinian. But this is not a problem because identity is part of different background, different experience, different meeting, etc. So personally, I think it's a plus. Feel Sardinian, feel with a specific identity, and then it's an opportunity to meet other identity. I found something similar, for example, in Irish culture, Sardinian culture, there are a lot of aspects very similar. It's interesting. Have a talk and meet similarity or difference in your life.
And is being European sometimes a way to escape a little bit from the kind of more narrow nationalism? Dorothy, sometimes is it good to be European?
Is it good?
As opposed to just being described as German?
Well, you said escaping nationalism. Well, I suppose, yeah, it's when we define ourselves like as a person from the country we were born in or raised, it is very much a nationalistic point of view, and that would involve borders, and it's a concept of the mind, yeah. So being European kind of breaks down the border, so it kind of opens it up that we are one of, with the European Union 27, or like in Europe even more countries. I just wanted to, can I say something to what Maurizio said, because I feel very strong about that as well. As in,
yeah, go on. Yeah, you can say that.
I just want to agree with a lot of countries have such a strong diversity that a lot of people like feel very strong to what area they're from in Germany. So I would be very strong a Northern German, or you know, or Western or Eastern, or like, or even if you're from cities, like maybe somebody from Berlin shares much more with somebody from Madrid compared to Berlin and the countryside in Germany. So that kind of plays part in our identity and being as well, I suppose.
Christina, what part of Spain are you from?
I'm from Northern Spain, just beside the Basque country, but not Basque.
And does that give you a strong sense of identity, that part of Spain, that region?
Well, I think generally when you look at identity, you can, I think the most difficult thing to do is to find something that unites people generally. I think the easiest thing that you can do is find things that divide people locally. So when you actually, and I think that's what the European Union has given us, a different way of looking at identity in a positive way. Because when you look at the likes of Spain, for instance, the divisions are extreme, you know, and it starts, you know, from, you know, the village that you may be from, the football team that you may belong to, the city, the community within that city, the province, the county, and it goes on and on and on. And we do have a problem, and for some people it's not a problem, but for me it is, where people define themselves against this idea of being Spanish. So you have Basque, you have Catalonians, you have Asturians, you have Valencians, you have Menorcans, you have... There's so many people willing to divide themselves and to get themselves, you know, defined by that this small thing, which I think is important. It's actually the biggest part is to actually be defined in this unity of people that come together because there's a state of mind. So do I feel myself defined for being northern Spain? Yes, I do. Do I feel myself defined by the fact that I'm from the mountains and not from a desertic area? Yes, I do. Do I find myself defined by the songs and the food of my culture? Of course. But I think...
You can actually sing a song during this program if you want to help us appreciate your identity.
I would
as
not
well.
Advise it. I could, but you know, it probably would go against everybody's ears. But what I'd like to say probably about this is that, and very much with Maurizio was saying, there's a lot of layers that come when it comes to identity. You know, of course, it defines me also to be the daughter of my parents rather than somebody else's parents. So everything that you experience in life defines you. And I think the important thing is that diversity is not seen or should not be seen as opposition within the European Union. And this is strive to be defined in a larger aspect and find things that actually bring people together. We share a history within the European Union.
So... I know it's a difficult question for you to answer because you can't speak for all Spaniards or all Basques. But do
or
you
all
think?
People in the world.
But do you think that it's easier for people in the Basque country to associate with being European because they're not as comfortable with being Spanish?
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I think Iñaki should come into the debate about this.
Iñaki is our producer today, just for listeners.
But I think, I think it's even more difficult. I say my view of being very much an outsider is that, you know, when you're trying to define yourself and be legitimizing your definition of being, in this case, Basque, it has to become more important and take precedent over everything else because it's at an early stages of a genesis in terms of being, not the way you think about yourself, but how you want the world to see you and accept you. So I would think it's actually even more difficult. I don't see any noddings from the producers, so I'm not sure if I'm in the right track.
Rasti, we'll go back to Slovakia. Yeah. Do you think that partly our identity is not just about what we have in common, it's also about things that we're not? Does being not North American or being not African or not Asian make us more European?
Well, there might be more Anglosphere view on this. Obviously, it could be easier to define who we are not than we may face to a situation when the people would respond like we all did around the table. What do you, or whom do you feel to be? And I would come back to this question because I think it might be a big difference asking whether you feel being a European in comparison to asking about it being a European citizen.
Yeah, okay, that is a big difference. So what's the answer? Do you feel more like
a
European?
I do feel being a European, as I've explained already, and referring to the fact that Slovakia and even Ireland, which is the country where I live now, both states are geographically in Europe. But regarding the, or when it comes to a discussion of EU citizenship, all of us we've heard of, we've heard this expression or referrals in various media, journals, newspapers, on the TVs, even the political documents. Refers to EU citizenship or EU citizens. But in fact, there is nothing like a legal setup or citizenship in practice, if you know what I mean. And this might be quite interesting to follow what would happen. For example, in Slovakia, there is a legislation which does not allow Slovak citizens to apply or to get another citizenship. Like, for example, I'm a Slovak by nationality, many years living in Ireland, and mm-hmm. if I, to make it correct, obviously it does allow you to apply, but if I apply for Irish citizenship, and if I'm granted Irish citizenship, I would have to give up Slovak, or I would have to report this to the Slovak government, so I would lose the Slovak citizenship.
So how important is a national citizenship? Because if you can travel or if you can live in any part of the EU with Dorothy, is it important? Do you still have a German passport?
Yeah. And the only right which I'm not entitled to in Ireland is to vote on national election. I can vote on local election and a European election. And being a member of the European Union, having fulfilled the habitual residency, I think you have to work to live for 2 years in Ireland. I can make a claim for social welfare if I were unemployed. So being from the European Union, I have access to services. So, not for national voting. But I think that's the. Apart from that, I have access to all the other services. So for me personally, I don't have a pressing desire to take up Irish citizenship. I know, like for non-European nationals, like for third country nationals, it's very difficult. Even if the parents have been living in Ireland for years, let's say a child from China, the parents have been both living like for 8 years in Ireland. The child can't apply for mm-hmm. citizenship in its own right until it reaches the age of 18.
What about the way that Christina was talking about that by being European, there is something that we have in common? So apart from whether or not you can sign on the dole, is there something that we culturally have in common? Can you say that there is a sense of a cultural Europeanness that we share? Maurizio?
We have a lot in common in Europe. It's a huge privilege to be European. I have a lot of friends from Russia or Africa and can move, can be in Ireland, citizen like me. So I know that's a privilege, and I'm proud to be European, Italian, with a passport. There are a lot in common in a European country. It's not just a geographic area, I think. It's not just... So
what is it? Can you pinpoint it? What have we got in common?
Usually people say it's like Christianity, the religion, is that what we have in common.
Well, is it? I mean, like, where does Europe start then or end? Like, if we look at Turkey or... But I don't think it's not part of the EU, but it's an accession.
No, about Turkey, personally, I against the inclusion of Turkey, not because it's Islam country, but because the human rights reasons. I think what we have in common is democracy, is the social mm-hmm. justice.
I suppose, what about Bosnia? They've been
non-Christians. It's the same. The same. Mm-hmm. I think a feeling common in Ireland or in UK or in Spain is not religion, it's not history, it's not the language, of course, because it's different, but it's the social welfare, it's the democracy, it's the relationship between citizen and power. This is much more important for me than... other elements. I mean, it depends for different people think different, but that's my approach.
The former Taoiseach, the former Deputy Prime Minister in Ireland, said that we're closer to Boston than Berlin.
Mentally or with our migration
pattern? What do you think she meant by that, Dorothy? sorry, it was Mary Harney's quote. Mary Harney's quote. Does anyone want to come in on what you think Mary Harney was talking about when she said that Ireland is closer to Boston than Berlin?
Well, I'm not sure where she was coming from, obviously, because I'm thankfully not Mary Harney. But I think from what, you know, what Dorothy was talking about, from a migration point of view and this tendency, you know, there is this, in a lot of ways, if you're talking about Ireland as a project within the European Union, it's very interesting to see the contribution Ireland has made in terms of the United States of America, and in a lot of ways there's a lot of links there between Ireland and the States that sets it probably apart from other European unions, from other European countries within the Union. So maybe in reference to that, even though immigration from an Ireland perspective into Europe has been, well, they've gone everywhere really, you know, Irish people, you can find it in Irish pop everywhere in the world, but I think it may come from that, you know.
I think to some extent it was economically.
Yeah, you share the language, exactly, you establish a new life there, so it's from my economic migration.
It may have been more about how they set up their economy and how they run their society that most Europeans would have free education and would have a very well established social welfare system, but that's not the case in the United States, and in that sense Ireland would be different, with a lot of home ownership and a lot of very poor public transport, so much more reliant on the car, much more low density housing. Is Ireland a bit out of step with most of, I mean, most people in Europe live in apartments and most people in Ireland live in houses?
I'm not sure if being out of a step is the word. It's certainly a different type of a structure when it comes to Europe. You know, you can recognize, you know, when you go into the likes of Spain and then you go to, say, for instance, I'm from Santander up north, and then I went to Hamburg in Germany, and I could recognize the layout of the cities. These structures that have been set up within an urban setup in terms of how people meet in the streets and how we actually relate in the streets. In Ireland, it's different, but that's more cultural in a way, and there will be cultural differences all over Europe.
And is that because the Romans built all the cities?
What do we have to thank the Romans for, yeah? Is that the question?
Well, they never came to Ireland, I suppose. So, Rasti, you come from a part of Europe often referred to as Central Europe.
Yeah,
known for the kind of great cities of Budapest and Vienna and perhaps Bratislava. But is Central Europe an important place for you?
Yes, it is. Firstly, because there is Slovakia, which I still consider being my homeland. And to be honest, I'm not very happy hearing when people refer to Central Europe as Eastern Europe. I know that let's say, political aspects of view and geographical.
Okay, so for you, where is Eastern Europe?
For me?
Yeah.
The Eastern Europe, the Euro separates the Asia and the Europe. Okay, so it would not be behind it, but somewhere at the Russian region.
So Moldova or Armenia or somewhere very far to the east. And do you think people in Ireland think that Slovakia is in Eastern Europe?
I think that most of Irish people, do use the political view of having seeing the Europe. All of us, we were taught like that. This is a Western world, and that's the Eastern part of world.
Post-communist
countries, yeah, but. As I say, like for example, Czech Republic and Prague, particularly, was known or has been known as the heart of Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose
what Dorothy was saying, when Central Europe, when the heart of Europe, got left into communist Europe, it became behind the Iron Curtain and a part of what we generally called Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So places like Prague that were further west geographically than Vienna ended up in Eastern Europe, but Vienna is a Western.
This is something what I've used as argument when having a chat. Obviously,
I was doing my homework earlier, so
not formal discussions with the friends, the Irish people, having debates. Why I insist on using the expression Central Europe rather than Eastern Europe, and believe or not. One of the responses I was getting from Irish people was, you know, from Germany to the east, it's all Eastern Europe. So I said, it means the Austria would have to be. And then he, hold on. And you know, what currency is in your state? And we had a Slovak krona at that time. So I said, a Slovak crown. And he said, oh, you know, that's the point. So the countries that are not on, have not been on Euro, those are Eastern Europeans. Well, then I, like, have you heard of British pound? Okay, and then it came to another topics, and we forgot about what's the better expression, whether to use Eastern European or Central European, referring to people like from Poland, Slovakia, or Czech Republic, or these regions.
Maurizio, is it easier to have something in common with people from Western Europe? Is there something that's Western European that's easily that people have in common from Italy to the Netherlands, to the Nordic countries in Germany and France? Is that an easy sense of European, but once you go further east, it becomes harder to relate to people as the same?
I think they are more different with just East European country, respect France or Spain or neighbors countries. But definitely, I feel European, like Polish people, Czech people, etc. The difference is the history. The history, the communism is different in the state and the relationships. Or what I said before, for me it's very important to feel European, the welfare state, the democracy. They are young democracy, the East European. That means also different approach with the power. Think about what's happening in Hungary at the moment. So for me, it's, I feel some difference, but like a South European country, I feel something similar with Moroccan people, but also with it's a border country. So and it's not a problem. It's a process to become European.
How important is language, or how important is being able to speak more than one language, or more than two languages? Is that really important in being European?
How important, or what's the benefits of?
How important is it if you only speak one language? Is it more difficult to be European?
Well, it's more difficult than to travel, and it's more difficult to become home or to feel home in another country. I think in order to feel comfortable, like to feel comfortable in both cultures, your home, your first culture, your first country where you grew up in, and then if you migrate voluntarily and you make that place your home, yeah, I think there's a strong necessity not only to speak and to understand the language, but there's so many fine nuances, to pick up.
To understand the cultural aspects.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll come back to language again in a minute, but I suppose because we're all from countries that are in the European Union, do you think that countries that are outside the European Union are a little less European? Is Switzerland or Iceland or Norway, are they less European than we are? They don't share the same laws or what?
They're on different trade arrangements, maybe. You know, I think that's more the difference. But from a sentiment of being European or non-European, I think it's there's different.
I would definitely not use the expression they are second-class Europeans or less Europeans. No.
Christina?
I think it goes back to that sense of history. And I think the points that we were trying to make around the Eastern Europe and Central Europe, and I think they're all valid in a way. I think when Mauricio was referring to the likes of Poland, Czech and Republic and so on, I think, you know, there is a breakage that happened, around, the communist times and the Iron Curtain and all that, that separated development or a historical connection between, old Europe in a way and New Europe, if you wanted to put it like that. I think with the likes of the countries that you're talking about, there is more of a sense of a history shared, and it may not be within that kind of idea, political idea or legal idea of the European Union, but certainly there is that sharing of history. I don't think if we went to Switzerland you would feel in any way, in a completely different part of the world.
Well, maybe we can ask someone from who's outside the EU. We're joined on the phone by Ida Holland from Norway. Hello, Ida, and welcome.
Hi, thank you.
We're just talking about countries that are outside of the EU. Why have the Norwegians stayed outside of the EU?
Well, to be honest with you, it actually wouldn't be beneficial for the Norwegian state to be in the EU. Our population is very small, so we would have a very small number of parliamentarians that would be present in the European Parliament. The thing is, as well, we do have, as most countries do, we do have a very high kind of income in Norway as well. Like, the country itself is extremely rich, and we would just end up, unfortunately, putting more money into the European kind of drain, which I don't think necessarily would be a good thing.
And do you feel like a European?
Yeah, like, I've lived in Ireland for years at this stage. So yeah, absolutely, I feel European. I think in particular when you have, as one of the other guests mentioned just now, like, we do have a shared history. Like, we were occupied during the Second World War as well, so, like, we're definitely very European. And I guess, like, we're not formally part of the European Union in the way that we're not in the EU Commission, but we also do have, like, a series of trade agreements, and we do pay quite a bit of money every single year just to get access to the European trade areas. So, yeah.
It's a curious point that being occupied during the Second World War would give you something in common with other people, because being from Spain, Christina wouldn't have that, and the Irish wouldn't have it, and the Swedes wouldn't have it. And I suppose Dorothy doesn't have
Who's
that
said?
Sense. Well, you weren't occupied by the Germans in the Second World War.
No, we were occupied by... Well, again, you know, if you talk to the people from Guernica, they'll have a different story on that.
Yeah. I also think that if you look at, for instance, Poland, France, Denmark, England, like, the majority of the European states do have one way, one relationship to the Second World War. Not the thing is, as well, you have to remember that during the Cold War as well, after the Second World War and up until very, very recent times, we were all in the same defense organization, which was the NATO, and all of us still are members. So there's a tie there as well, which doesn't necessarily only come with the European Union, but that has been kind of, like, been built up over the last, I don't know, I guess 70 years or so, and further down the line as well. Like, all of the European royal families are intermingled and interbred and whatnot. So, you know, there's ties there as well.
But I suppose the French, and for different reasons, the Irish, wouldn't have anything to do with NATO in that regard. So that wouldn't give you the same sense of European identity that it would to other countries. Do you think that we were talking about languages? Do you think that languages are really important?
Well, to be able to integrate, absolutely. It's hugely important. As far as it depends on the size of the country that you're from. For instance, if you're coming from France or if you're from a very large country, the need for learning a second language is, might not be so huge. But if you come from, say, any of the Baltic states, or if you're from Norway or Denmark or Sweden, you have to have a second language. So, yeah.
Do you think that also with regards to that connection between Norway and the rest of Europe, certainly in Ireland, and there is always this looking up at Norway as a really good role model. So there's a lot of knowledge shared in through the media. So there is a lot more awareness of Norway and Ireland and Europe. And I think that brings about a bit of that connection between the countries.
What kind of awareness do you mean?
Well, you know, if we talk about, you know, the maternity leave and things like that, it's always kind of the one country where you say, like, okay, you know, they've got it really right in Norway. Or when we talk about, you know, the amount of taxes that we pay in Ireland, then you kind of say, well, look at Norway. They do pay a lot of taxes, but look at all the services they get. I certainly say that a lot lately.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's definitely, I don't think it's necessarily limited in Norway, though. I definitely hear a lot around, like, that it's more like the Scandinavian welfare state, which could be any of the Scandinavian countries. Really, I guess that would be strongest probably in Denmark and Norway. But yeah, that's probably also like kind of shared values, and I guess also like the same way of kind of approaching issues around responsible governance and so on. So yeah, definitely. Like, of course, it's like Norway has, as any country that isn't a member of the EU, like, we do have a permanent mission to the European Union, and we are on certain committees and things like that for important legislation that affects the country. So, yeah.
Okay.
Christina, you mentioned that earlier about the social welfare or the type of society that we live in. Do you feel that that's common across all of Europe?
No.
Ida, you don't think that that's common? Is that something that's only available, or is that?
No, I'm not saying. So I haven't lived. I've only lived in Ireland, so So I can only speak for what I feel is in place in Ireland. It would be wrong for me to say anything about Italy or anything like that, but I feel that, like, definitely if I compare to home or here, I would rather be unemployed at home than here. I would have a lot more rights. There would be more opportunity for me to integrate into society. Mm-hmm. I would have more options. I would have a lot more options for, like, extra courses that I could take to integrate in itself. It's in regards to having children as well. Definitely, that's something that I would much rather have in Norway, just because you're better taken care of by the state.
Yeah, I was actually talking about that earlier on before you came on to the debate, and I came more from, and it's not so much from the things that are in place really, because I think Ireland has a good social welfare system when you compare it to other countries, certainly like Spain. But I think it's the state of mind, and I go back to that idea that, you know, if you. There is this concept, whether we get it to perfection or whether there's a lot of work that still needs to be done, which I think obviously still needs to be done, and there is this idea that the people that are not privileged or that they fall by the wayside or whatever demand our assistance as a society and as a civilization. So I think for me it's more about that state of mind really when it comes to the welfare system, that, you know, in Spain you may not have good social welfare system if you become unemployed, but you have a state-of-the-art medical care system which may kind of, you know, disappear in the next couple of years. But is that a state of mind where you
this
strife?
Why couldn't you have both?
Sorry, is that again?
Why couldn't you have both?
Well, I think it just is a work in progress, and I do think that certainly in Europe, I think that's the kind of idea where we have to help those that are not in a good position, and there is this demand of our attention.
And if we, if we understand Europe in that sense, that it's a kind of a societal thing, and it's how we build our societies, what does that mean for places like Albania or Russia? Are they not as European as we are, or do we not understand them to be European the way we are?
I would throw that in, and I would say I wouldn't understand them to be on the same values and shared ideology as I would be as an European. Yes, not that everybody in Russia is a mafia or they're trying to do everybody in or anything like that, but this idea that I would actually suggest that it is a different set of values.
So, Maurizio, would you feel the same?
Yes, I mean, I think it's important to think about being European is also a privilege, is a benefit for some countries. So some countries want to be European just because the money. it's not just a culture and a philosophical approach, but it's just a really materialist approach. And also European countries currently are European because of benefits to be European. Italian, I think, are European because some Italian doesn't like Italy. European is a resource for meritocracy, for welfare, for a different approach for politics, etc. It's the same for other countries. I live in Albania for almost 1 year. Albania won't be an European country, but being European is not just an treaty and a contract and a currency. It's something more deep and...
something in your soul.
Yes, why not?
Rusty, do you think music is important in our sense of European identity?
I believe it is, and I think that's actually one of the very common things that a European has among the whole Europe, whether you are a national of an EU member state or not. And I'd like to get back to the previous question.
Maybe if you just hold that thought for a second and we'll go to a piece of classic European music. And welcome back. You're listening to a programme on European citizenship. I'm Ciarán Murray. I'm joined by Dorothy Maher Holcomb from Germany, by Cristina Santamaria from Spain, by Maurizio Pittau from Italy, by Rasti Blaszczyk from Slovakia, and by Ida Haugland from Norway. What does that song make you think of, Cristina?
I don't think it's very European. It makes me think of my childhood, a Mamma Mia craze there a couple of years ago. But other than that, I think it's going back to the question of Eurovision and being children around the black and white TV set.
Okay. Rusty?
My opinion is that whoever who heard the song obviously had a view of at least Europe, if not particularly Scandinavia. And that's what I wanted to mention before we got to the song. Obviously, we would find a lot of similarities in the music from various European countries, whether it's Irish music or German music, Spanish, Slovak, or Italian, across the Europe. And I believe there would be a significant difference in comparison to, let's say, Chinese music, or maybe African music. So, yes, I do consider music or songs generally to be of a high importance regarding association of people with their either nationality or where they belong to.
And that's, I suppose, looking at a more traditional way of music in terms of the pop culture. Maurizio, is the Eurovision important in Italy?
Not at all. It's not important. Italy was not a participant restart 3 years ago. Nobody knows in my generation.
Oh, you have Eurovision. This other song contest, don't you? Like
Sanremo. Actually, the Eurovision concert was born from Sanremo.
Yeah.
But traveling, because I moved to different countries the last 10 years, I start to have to be involved in Eurovision contest, and in Ireland specifically, every year, we organize with some friends, European friends, and party. And there was a party last Saturday with some flags. it's just a party, but it's important because I was feeling part of the European. There was people from Finland, from Germany, from Ireland, from Italy, from Spain. And it was part of our culture. Also, trash music is part of our culture. So it's not just Beethoven or Spinoza. Also, trash music is...
And... Dorothy, does the Eurovision, though, does it bring in places like Ukraine and, I don't know, Moldova and places, does it make them feel a bit more European?
I think what you can sometimes see is like the strong relationships between some countries, you know, when the voting starts and all the neighboring countries start block voting to their friends or to their neighbors. So you see some historic links again or just geographical links. It's very close to Eurovision or to the World Cup, you know. It's a sense of belonging or the sense of celebrating with somebody else. It's a sense of distinguishing yourself as well. Like, so I see it similar to using that for that reason.
Ida, do you think that the Eurovision is an important part of our European identity?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a huge thing. I also think it's nice that not only the countries that are actually in the EU are part of it, but also countries like Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and so on. I really think it's really good.
Do you have big parties in Norway when the Eurovision is on?
Yeah, absolutely. Who doesn't?
Well, maybe who doesn't is a good question. Christina, did they have parties in Spain when you were business?
Gosh, I don't know anymore. I suppose it does, but it's changed so much. I don't know what it's like. I know, actually, a friend of mine from Sweden. We were talking about some plans on Saturday, and she would not go out because she had to stay at home and watch the Eurovision. So I don't know. I think in Spain, when you see the. The actual songs, there's a lot of Spanish people with the flag up and having a great time. So I think Eurovision is great because the sense of competition is different to a football match in a sense, you know, the sense of celebration. So I think it is nice.
Is it
it's
damaging?
A friendly way.
It's what?
It's more a friendly way to celebrate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You never see anybody being killed because Eurovision, you know, a fan kind of...
Is it damaging that most countries sing in English? Has it become just an English language song contest? Does that take away from the Europeanness?
My parents and a lot of other people, I think, would say yes. Like, or especially non-English speakers or people also who may not understand the English language, even though maybe more young people had voted for it originally because it is the most popular language in Europe or in the world, or one of the more popular. But yeah, I think it does take away from some of the uniqueness of the richness of individual countries.
Rusty?
To be honest with you, a music would not be my cup of tea. But having two teenagers in the house, like I would use the expression, sometimes I'm made to witness all these all these competitions and the Eurovision or various superstars and talent competitions. I think it really depends on the personality and like how people accept the music. Regarding the language used in these competitions, I think that there is no limitation like to English. It's obvious that for countries where the English is spoken language, the people would preferably sing in English. And on the other hand, I think it's a bit of shame that in those countries where, for example, in Slovakia, where a Slavic language is the mother language, singers do try and or perform in English. Maybe they must have their own reasons, maybe to attract a wider audience. But then,
To Ida and Maurizio, I have the impression that the Norwegians always sing in English, but the Italians always sing in Italian. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I was very surprised, personally. It was just, I think, four of our countries singing in national languages. It's a pity for me. Maybe you're talking about European citizen, but we forgot we are living a cosmopolitan, globalized society. English, this is one market, one language. That's a pity. Personally, I'm. It's not just this, but
I think it should not play a big role. But unfortunately, it's my personal opinion that it always comes to how many people have you attracted by the language you selected and the song that you presented.
Ida, what do you think? Maybe it's the only time we get to hear Norwegian spoken is if they sing it at the Eurovision.
I think it's a shame they don't sing in their native languages. Subtitles is something that most of us would be used to at this stage, so yeah, I really think they could. That might be the only chance you get to hear Norwegian, I guess. But
can I say Spain also sings in Spanish?
But I think it's important that you feel that you should say that. I'm not guessing, but I imagine the French always sing in French. I can't imagine the French singing in English, could they?
But it's like all large European countries usually sing in their native language. It makes sense, you know. They're also what is considered to be like the core of Europe in many ways. That's at least like how I would see it.
We got to music, I suppose, because we got to the Eurovision. We were talking about music and some kind of shared cultural background. Is there a shared philosophical background in Europe? Does it come from the great French and German philosophers and all the way back to the Romans and the Greeks? Is that something that's important as a part of European identity?
Well, I think Europe is the cradle of civilization and democracy. And you mentioned Roman town planning or Greek town planning as well, like the agora, like the open space. So yeah, I think a lot started in Europe, and a lot of civilization and the richness of the diversity of the different cultures we have in such a small cluster, like the amount of population in such a small space, and also the difference of the climate, of the geography, like from mountains to I don't know, flatlands. So,
and Maurizio, are you conscious of a rich European philosophical tradition?
It's my background, it's my culture. Definitely, yes. It's part of my identity, like literature or music. There are more in common than difference if you compare with India, South America, or Africa. But personally, I don't think philosophy is the main reason to be to create a European community, because it's not the
most important reason. European philosophy is part of American culture as well. It's not, we are export our culture everywhere, but definitely it's part of our background.
And is our societies built on ideas, Christina?
I think so, and I think I would disagree with Marich. I think the philosophical backbone of Europe is huge. I think at so many levels, it's like, I think in terms of historically speaking, I think we have been, as a civilization, I'm not sure whether with the cradle of democracy and all that, but we certainly have made sure that for the longest period of historical time, we've been the ones leaving things behind from a European perspective. You know, you may have other cultures all over the world that may have come and gone without leaving much mark on it, but I think that the fact that, you know, we started, you know, the likes of Greek and Rome and the expansion that that happened and how we grew to be, the fact that you could recognize architectural heritages all over Europe, because we've shared that movements throughout Europe have started saying the likes of Paris beheading kings and queens, and that kind of spread all around the world to create a huge revolutionary movement. I think there is a lot of that goes with that in terms of ideals, values, and a vision of the future. We still have a lot of things to get right, and I think a lot of things that we still need to share with the rest of the world that will bring us together as a way of thinking. But we've put so many things in place already that we've been talking about that a lot lately within the European Union, the fact that, you know, we think since we signed to all these agreements of coming together and sharing borders, there is still violence out there. There is still a lot of hostility within our species as a human race. But we haven't seen within the European confines a war. And I'm grateful for my children and, you know, that we haven't seen that. And that even though with all the difficulties that we have now at the moment from an economic perspective, a social perspective, it is a test to the European Union right now. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that we're actually going to be successful in overcoming, because it's the first real challenge to the European Union because of the diversity in practices almost and in ways of thinking. But, you know, I am very hopeful for the European Union and I do believe in it, just only on those basis.
And in terms of being hopeful for it and being a believer in it, Rasti, I'll ask you a question. Do you think that the British are less comfortable with being European than a lot of the rest of us?
Being European or members of European Union?
Okay, well, you can take that question either way, I suppose. Okay.
It's hard to respond, as I do not feel being British, but my personal view would be that they feel as European as is my feeling. And regarding their ties relation with the European Union, I would not be surprised if British are, let's say, somehow a bit reluctant to be a comparable part of the European Union, as for example Germany or other big, large states which are EU members.
Okay, yeah, I know it's a difficult one to answer because you obviously can't speak for the British.
For and on behalf of British.
We've only got a minute left, so I want to wrap it up by just asking each of you, do you think that the place in Europe, the country, the region that you're from, in the next generation will become more European? Dorothy?
I think it comes back to right to the beginning a little bit, like, do I feel German or European? Or I think it's very fluid, like our identity, like we go through different processes and at different times we focus at different areas, like even like with the European Union, we had a focus over the different years on different policies, like starting with CAP and, I don't know, environmental, immigration, and now the financial crisis. So
yes, you do.
There will be a different you.
Rasti, do you think the next generation in Slovakia will feel more European?
I believe there are two scenarios. and it all strongly depends on how the EU goes ahead with the difficulties that have to face too.
That's a good point, and leaves the weight on the EU. We'll have to wrap it up. Wow. So Maurizio?
Definitely, yes. The second generation, usually people come in other countries. There are a lot of mixed couples. In Ireland, there are couples with three nationalities, people from Brazil, married with Polish, with some Irish. And it's a movement, it's a fluid, liquid movement, European. It's not a sort of, the reason is not philosophy or the religion, but it is what's happening now, and we can stop this. Because all new generation are more connect with other.
I think I'll take that as a positive. And the last word to you, Christina.
I agree with Dorothy. I think it's going to be a different Europe. I think this generation coming, not that we've had it very difficult, but they certainly are a privileged lot, and that will help to unite that kind of idea of European. But I do think it's going to be a different project.
Okay.
Project now.
The EU.
Okay, and that's all we have time for. So thanks very much to my guests, Dorothy Meyer Holcomb, Christina Santamaria, Maurizio Pitto, and Rusty Blaszczyk, and Ida Hogland on the phone. Thanks to Communicating Europe Initiative and the Department of Taoiseach for the support in making this programme. Muil Bwikas, Slán agus Banacht.
Tschüssi.
Buenas noches.
Arrivederci.